Welcome to the Chicago Camps 2017 Prototypes, Process, and Play Design Leadership Conference podcast, sponsored by Balsamic. With Balsamic mockups, anyone can design great interfaces. And in partnership with Simplecast, publish your podcast the easy way at simplecast.fm. This podcast features Sophia Miller as Creative Director of Product Design and Tammy Evnen, Lead Product Designer, both of NASDAQ, and their presentation, World's Best Boss, Lessons Learned from a New Design Leader, from August 11th, 2017.
Hi, everyone.
Thank you.
So, yeah, this is us, like Russ said. I'm Sophia Millares. I'm the Creative Director of Product Design at NASDAQ. I've been there for 5 years, four of those as the Creative Director. My role mainly is to push for all the visual and styling efforts for all of our products, kind of creating a cohesive experience throughout all of NASDAQ. And for any user that logs into a NASDAQ product, they know that it belongs to the NASDAQ family.
Hi, I'm Tammy Evnen. I have this title, Director of Portfolio Design Strategy, which is similar to what Sophie's saying, like overseeing consistency across all the different products that we work on. We work on a lot of things that kind of come together in one way or another, and so we found that over time it's really helpful to kind of make sure that there's a core part of the team who's seeing how all of the pieces come together, and that's what I do. So we wanted to just start by saying, you know, a little bit about more about ourselves and kind of how the team came together so that you can get a little bit of context and understand how we became managers and leaders on our team. So Sophie and I have been part of the product design team at NASDAQ for a while. It's been many years at this point. And at that point, we were a team of four practicing designers. So it was a brand new team to the company. While NASDAQ has been a software company up to that point, they didn't have a really solid product development process or any design practice. And so, you know, a lot of what we were doing at the beginning was establishing best practices, kind of like just trying to keep our heads above water and complete projects while also trying to say, okay, here's what things are going to look like from now on, or here's kind of our you know, the secret sauce that we're going to bring to this process. So, you know, we were always working on projects, figuring it out as a team. And then over time, the team started to grow. We were successful on the couple of projects that we worked on, and so that you know, gained us more work and visibility within the company. And so our team went from being four people to, you know, like 15 really quickly, and now we're hovering around like the 20 mark, a 20 person mark. So, yeah, I mean, there was a lot for us to learn along that journey, right? It wasn't anymore this, you know, just couple person team who could be scrappy or just, you know, go over to someone's desk and ask them what they were working on. But we had to figure out how our process scaled, how we could be more, you know, consistent and successful across a bigger team. And, you know, that's basically kind of how we got into the positions that we did. So yeah, we today just want to share some of the lessons that we've learned along the way. We're really new to this idea of management. Something we wanted to do before we really dive in is just get kind of a poll of the room. Can you raise your hand if you manage people or have managed people? Awesome. Okay, so it's a lot of you, or most of you. And then raise your hand if you've managed people for longer than a year. Okay, cool. So, you know, you might be able to give this talk to us, actually. But we think that, you know, we hope at least that we can share some of the things that we've learned. You know, you can, like, read books on management or have trainings in your company. But I think we wanted to share some of the more, like, softer skills that we've picked up along the way that, you know, I don't think either of us really anticipated. So we'll talk about delegation. We'll talk about, you know, we've heard a lot just in the last couple of minutes about not having the time to do work yourselves and having to kind of rely on a team to do that and what that impact has on you as the designer, but also for your team. We'll talk about communication with people that we manage and also like communication with those above us or across in the organization, and what we've learned about being transparent with our teams, but also being guarded with some of our information. We'll talk about finding our voices as leaders, and then, you know, how we found that really helping our teams find their own voice was made us the most successful and made our teams the most successful. And I think, again, like lots of, we've heard a lot of themes over the last 2 days from all the speakers that I think, you know, hopefully some of this will start to bring that together. And it's been really exciting to hear all of your insights to kind of guide us as well. So just quick note on the Michael Scott. We've heeded some advice from our friend Michael. So he's going to help us a little bit as we transition into this role, this whole new world as being managers. One quick note, because we've got a number of our colleagues in the audience, that we just want to assure everyone that none of these stories are about you. They are about you, Jeremy. So, you know, we tried to protect the innocent, and hopefully won't, you know, no one will be offended. And, you know, we also don't necessarily endorse Michael Scott as a great manager, but I think there's plenty that we can learn from him. So hopefully we'll have some fun along the way.
Great. You know, I think as a creative director, the first thing I found out is I was redoing a lot of work. I don't know if anybody's been there before, but really what happened is I, just like everybody else on my team, I started as a practicing designer by myself, you know, in front of a computer, putting up designs, sending them out, designing. I wasn't really sharing my process or how I like really got to that point. Some of the decisions that I made, I wasn't really really communicating to anybody. I didn't really have to. It was just me, the one designer. And so I immediately realized that that needed to change when I became a manager. I needed to be more transparent because a lot of the time it was just getting all these projects delivered and they didn't really look the way I wanted them to look. And so I ended up going into the project and redoing it myself. And that was definitely not sustainable for me or for my team. The morale was down. You know, it's like, oh, Sophie's going to come in and just fix it. So I don't have to do anything. So the first lesson I learned was to, you know, how to give good direction. That was huge. It really meant that I needed to rethink my method. I didn't really know what method I wanted to use, because it was the first time I was going to be doing this. So, you know, I started to think about what I could do talking to my teammates. So one of the things I did is, you know, I would sit with them. Literally, I would print out their work, and I would go old school, and I'd like sit next to them and be like, all right, so this is why this doesn't work. And I would circle it, and we would talk through it. And, you know, that was a point where, you know, I learned that different people work in different ways. Some people have certain strengths, certain weaknesses, and I just needed to really learn how my team worked in order for me to give them the best direction I could, be more clear, different ways to give direction. That was huge. Like, you know, I'm a super visual person, so talking, sometimes I don't get my point across. So I needed to figure out systems for me to kind of give that point across. So, you know, having a WebEx, creating more designs, or actually, you know, creating a little wireframe and then sending it to them and be like, this is sort of what I was thinking. Did you get it? And then getting feedback from them to see if they actually understood what that direction was. And then I also needed to be way more clear about the roles, the tasks of the project, who was going to work on what, and mainly my expectations. Is this going to be high fidelity? Is it just a wireframe? Who are you going to present it to? So they knew that at the end of the day, this is what I needed.
All right, so the next kind of challenge that we face is playing telephone. We've all been there where you're in a meeting with someone, like a boss above you who just kind of comes in, swoops and poops all over their design, and, you know, basically you feel like you have to start all over and, you know, really rally the team to deliver changes in a really short amount of time. As a manager, you all of a sudden have access to a bunch of conversations that you weren't privy to before. And, you know, while these meetings could be more strategic, and so you're in conversations about defining the project, defining milestones, planning for a release, things like that, you may also be suggesting a new feature. Like, you have the access to do that. You know, you also have access to stakeholders that you probably didn't before or may not have had as much access to, like, you know, development partners or business owners. So you have this access, but that also means that, you know, you have a lot more information to process. You're part of the decision making, and you really understand like the insights that went into the decisions. And so there's just way more information for you to process, and it's super important to distill that information then to your team. So the next lesson we learned is about communication. I think what we've really learned is that step one is to just stop, take a deep breath, and let yourself process this information. You know, you have to make sure that you understand before you can communicate with anyone else and you know, give them clarity. So, you know, kind of just stop and wait it out a little bit. Make time, take that time to distill the information. Next, when you meet with your team, you know, it's important to be clear in the direction that you give and tasks, assignment, things like that. But it's also really important then to take those decisions and this new information and make sure it's documented, right? Like it's somewhere that someone can look back on later, you know, after the first time you met when no one understood what's going on. People can find a place, you know, find this stuff in writing somewhere else and kind of try to learn it themselves. So for us, on our team, we use some combination of like Trello or Basecamp, but even a quick email to recap has been immensely helpful, or, you know, making sure like everyone give a thumbs up in Slack just to make sure we're on the same page. Like those little moments of, you know, are we good? Are we all on the same page are really helpful. And then, you know, finding the time to be available afterwards. You're probably going to have to explain yourself a couple of different times, different ways. Like Sophie was saying before, learning how certain team members need to hear the information. You know, you may have to kind of deliver the same message multiple times. So, you know, give yourself that time to do. And then, you know, I think most importantly at this stage, your responsibility is to help your team focus their time. So, you know, you're the person who sets the priorities. You help people prioritize their time. Say, this thing is no longer important. Don't worry about it. I think, too, for me, something that's been really, like, for me, helpful is when things are taken off of my plate. I think we often think about kind of adding on work or clarifying work or whatever, but sometimes the most helpful thing for your teams is to make something not their problem anymore. So, you know, I think yesterday Matt Milan was speaking about create confidence by reducing uncertainty, and you know, that was sort of like managing up and speaking with, you know, executives in their language. I think that also really relates when you're managing down to your team and helping them sort of reduce that uncertainty for themselves. That can just be really helpful for folks. And then the last thing is, you know, support your team when distractions come in. So especially when you're working across many projects, you know, you can't be on every conversation, but you also sort of have to make it clear that you should be that the filter for a lot of information for your team. So, you know, making it clear to the other stakeholders that you're working with that, you know, if new work comes in or a question about, you know, the last delivery comes through, that you should be the person that takes that question and then decides whether or not to delegate it out. Kind of taking that burden off your team as well so that they don't feel like they have to say yes to everything, and you could be the bad guy on their behalf, can be really helpful.
So next, it was basically, you know, you should work on that. Like, now you have this list of projects. Now you have to assign people to it. It was a little daunting to me, actually, at first, just to really tell people what to do. It wasn't really my forte. To me, in a sense, too, it was really kind of overwhelming that I was going to be letting go of, you know, having to work on everything, because you can't. You know, I think, as Susanna said it earlier, it's like delegate or die. So, yeah, you know, that moment when you're like, okay, I
just can't do everything. And for example, like Tammy said, for the first 2 years, our team went from being six people to being seven. And so we were growing like really slowly. We were hiring people, and then we acquired a company. And within that company was a design team. So that design team joined us, and it was exponential, like from 7 to 15 to 20 in the span of like months. So in reality, I needed to figure out like how I'm going to work with more people, how I'm going to scale my process and my vision and my direction. And so as a team, so the lesson is basically delegating work. You know, that's something that I learned really quickly. The first thing that we did in this sense is you know, we created resources for our team. We created pattern libraries. We created, like, starter guides. This is sort of what we've done so far. That's actually our pattern library for our team. If you were prototyping or just on Sketch, I just needed to be sure that I was creating the tools for our team to, you know, be empowered to go in and design without me having to be sitting, like, next to them, like, saying, oh, no, that's not the right color, or that's not the right button. So that was super important. And in a sense, it made me just feel a lot more comfortable delegating all the work. And I knew that in the end, the work was going to be what I expected. So the next thing, it was like assigning, you know, relevant projects to relevant people. Earlier, I spoke about like learning about your team and their strengths and what they're really good about, like what they're really good with, and you know, is either visual design, is it prototyping, is it coding, is it research, and understanding the type of projects that you have and really honing and saying, okay, you know, like Tammy's, you're going to work on this because you're really good at that, so I'm going to assign that to you. If maybe it's something like you want to challenge someone and say, hey, you know, like you haven't worked on or done any research in a while, or do you want to like do maybe like a research campaign? So it was also like understanding their needs, or maybe like something that they wanted to work new that, you know, maybe they didn't. And the last one is design mentorship. That's something that really helped me, like, you know, smaller projects where people's strengths might have not been, they're not like the most visual person, but they really wanted to be. So I would sit with them and I would mentor them in that sense. Abby, who's sitting over there, she's my better half of the team. And we created something called the SASB University, where we basically like put together classes for our team where they could like, you know, learn about Photoshop or Sketch, or, you know, what makes like good visual design, or what, you know, what good design look like, not to us, but just in general, and just really sharing our skill set with the team. I was talking to a friend recently too, and she told me that on her team, whenever someone joins the team, they have to make a list of skills that they will want to improve. And that was awesome. And so she said that, you know, I don't know, strategy, business, visual design, coding, and everybody has to do that. And so at the end, like, you know, if you're very good at coding and that's on your list, then you go to that person and say, hey, maybe I can mentor you. And, you know, both we can, you know, learn about coding. So, yeah. Full disclosure. So, you know, when you become really good at delegating, you're probably going to be stuck with the grunt work. I think that's where managers, we all know that, hey, you know, you got to order some computer for someone, or you got to, like, write business goals for the team. You know, you're not going to be really working on the design all the time. There's going to be a couple of things that that you just don't get to do because you're going to be in meetings or... But anyways, I think, like, in the end, you know, you do get the opportunity to showcase other people's work, and that's super rewarding.
Great. So the next challenge that we face is, you know, you can't be everywhere on every conversation. You're spread a lot thinner as a manager because you probably have visibility across multiple projects and streams. So it's really important to try to work with your team so that they can function on their own without you. And, you know, kind of like imparting your knowledge and the skills that got us into this position, into these positions, to other people so that, you know, they don't have to rely on you anymore, right? So empowering the team has become probably the most important, one of the most important lessons for us. I mean, you know, that's like your whole goal as a manager is to, you know, help lift other people up. So, you know, the first way that we found to do that is to, you know, in your role, you need to create opportunities for people and for them to present their work and kind of, you know, learn to speak about their work and stand up for the decisions that they've made or, you know, defend their designs in front of other folks. That, you know, you have to, it might actually be like scheduling a meeting that, you know, they are getting out in front of someone, whether it's more people on the design team or, you know, with development partners, things like that. Setting the time for them to speak is really important. That may also mean, too, that you have to, you know, spend more time with them to, like, teach them how to give that presentation. You know, it's definitely, I think, some of the themes we've heard today on thinking of, like, the design process as something that you can extend, like, helping people to set the goal and kind of figure out the best way to present their ideas is something that you should be doing all the time as a manager. On that note, you also have to be an advocate for your people. You know, you have to, in front of them and also not in front of them. I think it's really important to make sure that, you know, you stand up for your team, that you, you know, point out when someone's done really good work or kind of make sure that, you know, everyone knows who's, like, where an idea came from or what the team had been thinking about and why. And you know, that's a really important job for you is to like, be the voice for your team. And then something that I personally find really important is the idea of apologizing. I'm sort of a serial apologizer and trying to kick that habit. But I think I've noticed as a manager that I've... you know, people apologize a lot for, you know, if you're in a meeting and the you know, work that you present isn't exactly right or what we had talked about before, there's no apologies there, right? We need to be humble and, you know, talk through our decision-making process and explain what we can do better the next time, but that doesn't mean that you're sorry about it. And I think, you know, just kind of owning the work, teaching people to own their work and be confident in it is really important.
So yeah, you know, everybody likes to be liked, but when you're boss, that's not normally how it works sometimes. You know, to me it was like, that's the moment it's like, oh, you're gonna be a boss now, you're gonna be managing people. So I really had to prove my leadership, mainly to myself, a lot of the time. So, it was hard for me to go out and, you know, people that I've worked with for a couple of years now I was managing. And that was kind of like a very different mindset that I had to, like, change. That, you know, sometimes I had to, you know, lay the hard truth and it might not be easy or popular or fun. So, you know, I had to find my voice as a manager, as a leader, what kind of leader I wanted to be and how I wanted to be perceived by my teammates. So, you know, the first thing I knew is that I had to be prepared. I had to educate myself. I had to know about what people were working on and, you know, be able to answer any questions that they came to me. I had to be able to get a reason why to think sometimes. So if someone asks me, it's like, why did you design this way in the past? You know, if they're trying to replicate it or trying to use it as a pattern, I had to be, to say, you know, like, I decided to do this because the user thinks this way. Or for example, in the financial industry, you know, red is like a big color. And a lot of people like don't know that when they join our team. So if they design something and there's a lot of red all over the place, you know, I had to give them a reason, like, let's not do that. Let's hold back on the red because the users probably don't like red all over the screen. So also, I had to be confident. You know, I have to go in. If I sounded confident, if I knew that I was confident in the decisions that I was making, people would, you know, see that and say, okay, yeah, I'll go with that. That sounds great. You know, my design direction has changed a lot, like the way I communicate, the way I say it. Before, I was very timid about it. Like, well, you know, what do you think? You know, but sometimes you just have to say, no, this is how you wanted to do that, and you've got to be self-confident. At the same time, you know, listen to what they have to say too, but, you know, if you prove that you're confident, the leader, you know, they're going to see you as a leader. The last thing too is that, you know, if you're unsure about things, it's okay to say, I don't know, but just don't say, I don't know. Say, I'm going to find out for you. And you go and you talk to your boss about it. Just say, hey, you know, let me check with my boss. Let me find out. Let me get an answer for you, and I'll get back to you.
All right. So one of the last challenges we face is in trying to understand your team and, you know, make sure that you have a read on everyone, like just in general, kind of the sentiment of the group, or if people are struggling in a certain area or with other people on the team or on a project. And, you know, you're responsible for them now, right? You're responsible for their professional well-being, which can, you know, be a lot of responsibility. And so you have to make sure that you're setting the space to, you know, have this dialogue all of the time. And a lot of that starts with, you know, checking in with folks, like having dedicated time to do that, but also just being super observant, watching attitudes and behaviors and you know, trying to pick up on people's, like the patterns that they have as individuals and you know, just always be aware of what's going on in the group. And then, you know, obviously, like, you're responsible for making sure that projects go out on time and, you know, are successfully completed, but you're also responsible to make sure that your people are happy and, you know, productive and like the work that they're doing. And so you have to, you can't just be a project person, you have to be a people person as well. So take care of your folks. Make sure everything's cool. Check in, like I said before. You know, one thing that I'm totally guilty of is, you know, having dedicated time for check-ins, and then they're the first thing to go on your calendar, right? They're always kind of the lowest priority meeting. Anything else can kind of come in and move it around, and it's not a great habit. I think that, you know, it's super important to make those meetings a priority, but even just, like, having the placeholder on your calendar can be really helpful, because if it does get scheduled over, at least you know to move it, right? That seems like a really simple, like, calendaring tip, but I've just found it's really helpful because you have that time. You can't move it. You can't, like, throw it away. You know, checking in with your team is important, but then also you're going to check in on projects. You may have to have time to check in with people who might not actually be, like, your direct reports. But I find that kind of having that cadence of regular check-ins with people, even if they're not, like, you're not their boss directly, can be really, really helpful in making sure that, you know, that everyone's successful. So setting that pattern is really important. You have to be super transparent about what you're doing. Sophie made a couple points about this, but now that you're a boss, you're probably not doing as many things that are tangible. So you're, you know, you may not have, like, an actual design deliverable that you're responsible for. You might be in a lot of meetings that no one really knows what they're about, or you're just generally unavailable. You know, people may not know, like, where you are, how you're spending your time. So I think it's really helpful to be transparent about those things. So, you know, we were in this meeting with our business partners to discuss, like, the actual investment we're going to make in this project, or the most important priorities for this first version, and that resulted in, you know, us kind of changing direction on a project. Just being clear about these are the kind of decision-making conversations that I'm a part of, and it impacts all of us, right? This is, it's not just, like, talking for talking's sake, but it's, you know, you're part of these important conversations that impact the team. You know, make time and opportunities for other people. So we kind of mentioned this before, but, you know, I think it's really important to give opportunities to people to share their work. You know, especially if someone's new to the team, or you know, a project is new, something like that, it can be really helpful to just get other people's eyeballs on it. And you as a manager have to sort of make that time for them. So, you know, create opportunities for them to be to present their work to the team, maybe schedule like regular team meetings where people get to show and tell the kinds of stuff that they're working on. You know, people aren't really going to do those types of things on their own, probably. And it can be really helpful to present your work to your allies first, before you present it maybe to like development teams or product teams. And so as a manager, it's important to make time for people to do that. Recognize good work. I think oftentimes we just sort of like go through the motions and we forget to, you know, call out when someone's done a really awesome job on things. So, you know, this can be something as little as a Slack message saying, you know, Sophie did this really great job. Her designs went over really well in her last meeting. And, you know, like everyone give a thumbs up to Sophie in this chat right now. You know, that can be something really simple. We have a lot of remote workers, so that's really effective in that way. But it could also be something like a trophy that sits on someone's desk for a couple weeks. We have a GOAT trophy, stands for greatest of all this month, which kind of makes sense. But yeah, like even something silly like this that sits on someone's desk can be, you know, make someone really proud of themselves, or just feel recognized when maybe they were just kind of working on something, and, you know, like not everyone knew about it. So even little things like that can be really powerful for your team.
So just to recap, these are pretty much like the qualities that we find that have made us a lot better at our job than we were when we first started. Tammy and I basically like sat down together to put together this presentation, and you know, we realized that as managers, we've actually never talked to each other about it, like what kind of challenges you found in your work, and we found that we had very similar challenges, you know, very similar ways to also overcome them, and mainly we realized that we're also very different, you know. So I think something super important is that, you know, you figure out the kind of manager you want to be. I think that's super personal. You want to be more direct? Do you want to be more friendly? You know, it's something that you can set up, and it's something that progresses, especially when you start working with people a lot longer on your team. You kind of create this sense of like, oh, you already know what your boss wants. You already know what you want, and the expectations are already set. That's what we have for things.
Thank you. I think we have a good amount of time if there are questions.
So what kind of initial and now ongoing support and training do you get from your organization, if any?
So the question was, what kind of initial or ongoing support do you get from your company, like trainings or other support? I can start with that. So we're part of a large organization that has a lot of, you know, HR kind of training and resources. I think one of the things that kind of inspired the lessons that we shared here was that you know, Sophie and I have been a part of those trainings, and they just feel like really corporate, and like not the skills that we were learning in those things weren't super tangible for us to actually like go and take back to our people. And so even though these are maybe kind of not so tangible either, it's more of like those soft skills, I think, that have been the most useful. But yeah, there are like new manager trainings where they kind of talk to everything from like how to talk to people, or you know, the types of goals that you should be setting with your team, or here's like a system that you can, you know, go show them, like there's learning materials or things like that. But I think it wasn't necessarily practical knowledge. I think a lot of what we learned was just on the job, or you know, seeing the things that our bosses did that we liked or didn't like, and trying to kind of go from there.
Next, any other questions?
Sorry.
I love the idea of digital accolades, which I realize I see people on my teams do all the time. We do it all the time, but never really thought about it as a very concrete or discrete thing. I'd love to hear your thoughts around how that becomes something more formal or more deliberate, as opposed to just like, hey, I'm going to give you like a wave emoji because I thought you were like pretty awesome there.
I mean, I think the trophy, it's one thing. We, as a team, we really try to check in as often as we can. We're a pretty tight team. And formalizing it, I think, you know, it's mainly either we send even like an email out, we put in product managers, like our boss's boss will be on it and just like calling, you know, saying like, for example, one of our colleagues, Casey, just like fully learned Drupal in like a month and put together this amazing prototype. So with Jeremy actually, who's here too. And Jeremy actually sent out an email to like really every stakeholder and was like very concrete about like, hey, let's give like Casey a big like round of applause for putting this together and making it possible, because that really, really helped.
Yeah, I think we've also started more recently doing like video check-ins as a team, because I agree, I think Slack things get lost in the shuffle really quickly, and because we don't always have opportunities to be together physically, even just having like your video camera turned on for 30 minutes with the team is like huge. It has really big impact. So I think we're not yet at the point where that's like a regular occurrence or something that has an agenda that, you know, is consistent across those things. But I think we're kind of moving in that direction where it's more FaceTime, even if it's digital, and, you know, just having those be like positive experiences. So it's not, oh, we're meeting because something bad happened, or, you know, we have to like tell everyone the bad news or something. Like making those times just positive moments, or maybe not even, like maybe there's not even something to tell, but we just wanted to all like have some FaceTime. Making the time for that, I think, helps too.
Yeah, and as a company, NASDAQ does this thing called a CEO award, where you actually can nominate someone, whoever, from your team, and just say, you know, this person was amazing at this, and the company recognizes that person, gives them, you know, a diploma, and so, yeah.
You get money, too.
Money, too. You get money, too. So, you know, that's always good.
You guys mentioned that you your team kind of scaled very quickly due to acquisition, and I'm just kind of curious if there was any, like, culture clash or, like, weird power dynamics that happened and kind of how you navigated that.
Yeah, there's some people in the room who were part of that acquisition that it's, you know, there was definitely some culture clash. There still is. No. I think we got really lucky, actually, in the acquisition scenario that we were part of, where our teams gelled really nicely. Like, the skills of the two teams complement each other really well. You know, there were definitely, like, people that don't work with us anymore who maybe didn't gel as well, and so that, you know, that kind of happens naturally, I think. But I basically all like what the process was to go and meet that team and kind of just talk about the work that they did and get a really good understanding of like their experience and the type of process that they are used to and seeing how that fit. You know, I don't know all of the decision making that went into how the teams would come together, but just like meeting and talking and finding that we had a lot of common ground was really helpful off the bat.
Yeah, yeah, I also think when that happened, we quickly learned the importance of onboarding. Even having like a chair and a desk for someone, you know, like, oh, they're starting tomorrow. Oh my God, okay. And you know, we even started putting together like checklists, like, do we have a phone for the person, a computer, like a badge to get into the building, like what time are they coming in? And within that, we've started really developing it a lot more. We started putting like, you know, presentations by specific people on the team about things that, you know, we've been doing, either projects or efforts, or even like what we show, which was like our pattern library and our visual style guide and all that stuff, like making sure that people feel like they're joining our team and we're excited about it, and that we're not like blinding them like the first day, you know, like here's some work, like good luck with that, you know. So that's helped us a ton, and you know, it's been like the growing pains. It's still like evolving sort of the onboarding process, but we just, like, we have two designers join us, what was it, like a month ago? Like a couple months ago? And I think that's been, like, the smoothest, best onboarding we've ever done as a team. I mean, it was pretty good.
Yeah. You know? I mean, but, it took a couple of years to get to that, for sure. It's tough.
All right, one last question, and it's from me, but it's not for you. Chris, what was it like for you to onboard new leaders? You know, what was your experience with that? What did you have in place, and or what did you learn about? What did you have in place? Because I know what I had in place when I had to do it. What did you have
in place when you
onboarded these folks?
That's a good question. It's actually in the outline that I think you're supposed to provide feedback on for this next chapter. Onboarding new managers, I think, is kind of an exercise in observation first, and then a lot of just kind of trial and error to see what starts to stick and see where folks have, either potential and also somewhat of an affinity to doing it, you know, and then to see if that comfort that they don't have is something that, as we heard Dan kind of refer to, like his son, he always avoids things that he needs more practice at, and so you kind of want to see.
What did you have in place for your onboarding process?
For like when we're bringing on new managers or bringing on anybody?
On them.
Oh, it was, I don't know, I think it was probably, you know, I hope the badge works on the door and a nice haircut. So.
I mean, I think a lot of, I'll help you a little bit here, but like a lot of it was.
No, that's okay. We're out of time.
Okay.
Well, nice haircut.
I was going to say some of it was organic though, right? Like it wasn't just like one day we were responsible for other people. Like we were responsible for other people first and then we kind of got that became official, you know? So like, I'm sure there were like actual things that we learned, but it also was, I'm sure there were like things that we did, but it also was just like, we were doing it already, you know.
At NASDAQ, we also say that you're probably going to be doing the job first, and then you're going to be assigned to it. So that's kind of how it happened.
Tammy, Sophia, thank you both very much.
Thanks for listening to the Chicago Camps 2017 Prototypes, Process, and Play Design Leadership Conference podcast, sponsored by Balsamic. With Balsamic mockups, anyone can design great interfaces. And in partnership with Simplecast, publish your podcasts the easy way at simplecast.fm. Learn more about Chicago Camps events on our website at chicagocamps.org.